it's so good to be with you again, the family here at Hillview. It seems like yesterday that we were in this same place and worshiping together. And it reminded me of the story as it so goes. A turtle was out for his daily run, and he was mugged by two snails. When the police showed up, they asked the turtle, "What happened?" And the turtle said, "I have no clue. It happens so fast." Today, in our message, it has a lot to do with time. But first of all, I want to mention that I had the honor of seeing Joanne last evening. And while I was there, she's resting comfortably. And while I was there, they were bringing meals for the supper hour. And she didn't get one. So I asked Joanne, I said, "Do you not get meals?" "Well, tonight I don't, because surgery may happen tonight." But in talking to Bob, it didn't happen last night. So we're praying that it will today, and see that happen for her. She is very much in our prayers, along with you, and God bless in this. We are looking at this somewhat discomforting book of Ecclesiastes. Now, as you may or may not know, Ecclesiastes has 12 chapters. So I want you to look at your clocks, and we're going to be here till, well, hopefully around the regular time. But I do beg your forgiveness in advance if we go a few minutes over to get an adequate understanding of what God means for us through this book of Ecclesiastes. Life is marked by the passage of time, and we mark it out in days and hours and minutes. I have that vivid picture of an old-style way of telling time. How many have seen an hourglass? I think they're around. They're not. I did find that the hourglass, you know, the two bulbs and the sand pours through, is still being used in the Australian Parliament. When they have an issue they have to discuss, they have a symbolic way of defining the amount of time they're going to use with an hourglass. One of the clear ways we mark time is with clocks. And I have a couple of very vivid memories of clocks. One of my sisters happened to be in Germany, and she purchased a cuckoo clock for her dad, my dad. She brought it home, and he put it on the wall. And every time we would come to visit, we were put in a bedroom not far from Mr. Cuckoo. So sometimes in the middle of the night, you wake up and you can't sleep, but you can hear that. And then on the half hour, Mr. Cuckoo would sing his song, and then he had a really big song on the hour. Then I also remember at Terry's Folks Place in Ponoka, they had one of those massive grandfather clocks out in the hallway. Same story, in the middle of the night, tick, 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 and then it would tell the time on the hour. The passage of time. Did you know, since we were sitting in these pews last Sunday, 7 days ago, 168 hours have passed. 10,080 minutes. And as I thought about that, it's sobering to realize that time is gone. We cannot go back and revisit that time that has passed on. That's the nature of life. Time passes and it's gone, and we are always forward looking. So in the middle of that, we ask questions like, what sums up a life? Is it the number of years? Is that what makes up a life? The number of years you can mark out? Or is it the achievements that I can accomplish in my allotted time? Or is it the size of my bank account? What defines a meaningful life? So we're looking at Ecclesiastes, and I have entitled the message, The Mystery of Life's Purpose. And I believe we can adequately define it as a mystery because there are hundreds and thousands, millions of people who have no idea of what this life is all about. And that will only be found out by recognizing that God is the God of life. So why are we here? Why was I born? How many of you, I won't ask you to put up your hands, but there was a famous song written, it was written by Pete Seeger in 1959, and it became a hit song a number of years later when it was recorded by the Byrds. And that song is taken entirely from Ecclesiastes, chapter 3, the first 8 verses. It was called "To Everything There Is a Season." And when it was recorded, if you look on Spotify or wherever, it's called Turn, Turn, Turn. And it's the words from Ecclesiastes, the passage of time. So I took those 8 verses in Ecclesiastes 3, and I counted the number of times time is mentioned. In 8 verses, 29 times. It's everything about time and the passage of time. Well, this book, Ecclesiastes, the author is identified in the first verse. And he says, "The words of the teacher, son of David, king in Jerusalem." Now, I understand in academic circles, there's a lot of debate about who really is the author of Ecclesiastes. My sense is that it is obviously Solomon, but scholars have the name Ecclesiastes is the Greek translation of the Hebrew word Kohelet. That's the Hebrew word, and we understand it as Ecclesiastes. The author, Solomon, writes Ecclesiastes as a message from the teacher, whose name is Kohelet. But it was penned by Solomon. He wrestles with the question, what is the meaning of life? And his observation is, if we miss the true meaning of life, it leads to despair. And that's his point. Now, the 5 poetic books that we are looking at this summer, as I am with you. Job, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Song of Solomon. Of those five, Solomon is the author of three of them. And it's very interesting. He writes these three books at different stages in his life. When he's young, and he happens to be young and in love, he writes Song of Solomon. We're going to get to that one in a couple weeks or so. Then in midlife, when he is facing all the complex issues of life, he writes Proverbs, a book of wisdom to deal with life. Then he comes to his elder years, in his old age, and he writes Ecclesiastes. The first one, he's young and in love. The second one, Proverbs, he's inquisitive, he's learning. And Ecclesiastes, he's become bitter. He's become disillusioned. And he writes about it in this book. I think, if you remember, I don't know about your graduating class, did they elect the person most likely to succeed? They did in my graduating class. Well, I think Solomon was voted the most likely to succeed, and he did. But he became bitter in the process. So I want to look at Ecclesiastes. First of all, he very clearly vents his frustration. Then in the largest portion of the book, he opens his diary and he tells us how he spent his life, and he talks about it and the observations he comes up with. And then in the last two chapters, he states his conclusions. And we'll get to that. But first of all, he vents his frustrations. And I don't know if you, in reading the book of Ecclesiastes, it's startling because it's so quick and intense. This is the way the book opens. Verse 1, the words of the teacher, son of David, king in Jerusalem. And then he says this. No sooner had he introduced himself, and he says, meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher, utterly meaningless, everything is meaningless. I think if I were talking to Solomon, I'd say, Solomon, tell us how you really feel. He is so intense that he mentions that word meaningless four times in one verse. In case you missed it, this is how I feel about my life. In the King James Version of the Bible, that word is translated vanity. Here in the NIV, it's translated meaningless. And it means futile, empty, trivial, absurd. That's the way he was looking at life. And I took the time to go through the entire book of Ecclesiastes and count the number of times he uses that word. 36 times throughout the entire book of Ecclesiastes. His frustration is very simple. Life is meaningless. And then he asks a question after he makes that statement. He says, what does man gain from all his labor at which he toils under the sun? In other words, what's the point of it all? And carrying it further, what is the point of living? He looks at the endless cycles of life. He says, I'll tell you why I've reached this conclusion. Look at how these cycles happen and there's no resolution. In verse 4, he says, look at your family tree, human generations. And he says, generations come and generations go and earth carries on. In other words, there's a birth and a life and a death. And we repeat it over again. There's a birth and a life and a death. And it just happens continually, generation after generation. What's the point? Then he says, take a look at your calendar. In verse 5, the sun rises and the sun sets. And tomorrow it does the same thing. And the day after tomorrow it does the same thing. What's the point? In fact, before we know it, we will have come to July the 12th. Today is July the 12th. We're going to come to July the 12th, 2027. And the calendar keeps repeating. And he finds that disturbing. And then he says, just look at the weather. And he uses specifically wind. The wind blows to the south and turns to the north. Round and round it goes. This constant cycle of weather from winter, spring, summer, fall. And then the next year we do it over again. And he says, also look at nature. Verse 7, all streams flow into the sea, yet the sea is never full. And he says, if you look at it, the streams flow into the rivers and then into the sea, and then it evaporates and becomes clouds, and it goes back to streams, rivers, and the sea. Constant repetition. So he says in verse 9, what has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. And he says, over it all, he's written one word, meaningless. In fact, studies have shown that there is a direct correlation between an increase in materialism and a decrease in religious devotion. When that happens, materialism increases, religious devotion decreases, it leads inevitably to despair. Much of our society demonstrates that. And he vents his frustration, and in these first 11 verses, he makes it abundantly clear his feelings, his frustration with life. So then he opens his diary and he tells us how he spent his life. This is from chapter 1, verse 12 to the end of chapter 10. We're not going to cover all of it in detail. And again, he repeats his qualifications. I, the teacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem, and I devoted myself. And he's going to tell us about how he spent his life. And these things that he gave his life to are essentially gifts from God. As we'll understand later, they can be taken and abused. So first of all, he said, I devoted myself to study and to explore by wisdom all that is done under the heaven. What a heavy burden God has laid on man. He says in verse 16, I have grown and increased in wisdom more than those before me. Verse 17, but I learned that this too is a chasing after the wind. I would caution, I would hope that no one would read this or hear this sermon and say, I'm going to quit my education because it looks like it's meaningless. No, don't go that far. There are reasons why he came to that conclusion. Then he said, in addition to education, he pursued pleasures. Chapter 2, verse 1, I thought in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure to find out what is good. And he says, I tried laughter. I don't know in Solomon's day if they had a comedy club, but he said, I pursued that active thing called laughter. He said, I pursued pleasures in wine. And it seems, he says, I crossed the line and I pursued pleasures in the area called folly, having to do with his moral life. And he comes to the conclusion, but that also proved to be meaningless, trying to find the lighter side of life. Then he says, I also pursued achievements. Chapter 2, verse 4. I undertook great projects. And he lists them. He says, I built homes, planted vineyards, developed gardens and parks, planted orchards, and engineered water systems. In fact, archaeology in that area of the world has discovered that Solomon accomplished a lot in the area of achievements. And then chapter 2, verse 7, he pursued material goods. He mastered the art of acquiring. I took chapter 2, verses 7, 8, and 9, where he talks about his accumulation, and I looked at what I call the verbs of greed. Verbs in the English language are action words, but in this case, they are verbs of greed. Here they are. He says, I bought, I owned, I amassed, I acquired, I became great. Impressive. And over all these pursuits, he wrote in verse 10, my heart took delight in all my work, and this was the reward for all my labor. Yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless, chasing after the wind. Nothing was gained under the sun. Everything is meaningless. Something has happened in the soul of this man to find ultimately God's gifts to him to be meaningless. As he writes his diary, all of these life pursuits, the uncomfortable truth is breaking into his mind. And this truth nudged his heart. He had been lying to himself. that these things would bring ultimate meaning. And they failed. Devastating to sense that I've been on the wrong road and my ladder of life is leaning against the wrong wall. So he says in verse 11, chapter 2, when I surveyed all that my hands have done and what I had toiled to achieve, one word, meaningless. So now what? That's a synopsis of how he views his life and his accomplishments. And I think as he's writing this book and he gets to the end, he's asking that question, what now? What's the answer to this? I like one of my favorite radio preachers over the years has been Charles Swindoll. And I remember a quote from him. I wrote it down. Very simple. It is never too late to start doing what's right. It is never late. So he states his conclusion to this dilemma. My sense is in these last two chapters, the key word is the word remember. Remember. Bring it back to your mind. Recall. And it's mentioned particularly in chapter 12, verse 1. It means to consider. It means to take action, to decide. This relentless moving of time, something has happened in the soul of this man that has led him to that conclusion that it's all meaningless. There are two themes that run through Ecclesiastes, and one is dependent on the other. It's like a symphony with these movements that happen throughout this symphony called Ecclesiastes. And it's identified by the number of times that these themes are mentioned. Here they are. That one word, meaningless or vanity, is one theme that runs through Ecclesiastes, mentioned 36 times. The other one is the theme that gives rise to the first one. That first theme is based because of the second one. And that theme is a phrase, under the sun or under heaven. 31 times. And what he is saying in this subtle way, life lived only under the sun will inevitably have a sense of meaninglessness. Life lived with no reference to what is above the sun. Earthly pursuits without eternal pursuits. Life's true purpose is found in what is above the sun. I came across it's a fable, Scandinavian fable, and it goes like this. A spider descended from the lofty rafters of the barn on a single thread to build a new world for himself. He landed by a window and, anchored by this single thread, began to weave his web. he had chosen well. It was a busy part of the barn, and he waxed fat and prospered. As rich and wealthy as a spider could be, he was walking around his web, his world, one day, and noticed a strand stretching from his web up into the dark of the barn. He had forgotten the purpose of that strand, and thinking that it had no purpose in his world today, he cut the thread, and his world collapsed. Somewhere in the life of this teacher, Solomon, he had moved from the fact that God is my anchor, God is my meaning, and life was lived strictly on the level under the sun. So he says, remember your Creator. He is above the sun, S-U-N, but he is the sun, S-O-N. He is your Creator. And in that command to remember your Creator, he underlines that with, don't put it off. Don't wait. Because he says, remember your Creator in the days of your youth. And I sense he's saying not your numerical youth. Otherwise, for some of us, this would have no application. The youthfulness of responding to God. When the Spirit is speaking, and he's speaking new, and he's speaking fresh, just like the days of youth. In fact, Paul wrote to the Corinthians, he said, and I can see Paul underlining it, now is the day of salvation. It's not tomorrow. It's not next week. The day to respond to God is as the Spirit speaks. Remember your Creator. While this Holy Spirit is speaking. And he also says, remember your Creator. And he specifically says, before the days of trouble come. And he gives a long list of what he means by this trouble, which may interfere with your response to God. Here it is. He says, before the days of trouble come, and life becomes unenjoyable. Life becomes pessimistic and hard. Or life becomes dark and difficult. This trouble is an attitude of trembling, and my strength is gone. The inability to be active. The eyesight diminishes. Life ceases to have a song. There's a deepening sense of foreboding. Desires diminish. Then he says, then man goes to his eternal home and mourners go about the streets. Remember him before death overtakes you. And he gives this poetic statement about the process of death. Verse 6, before the silver cord is severed or the golden bowl is broken, before the pitcher is shattered at the spring or the wheel broken at the well and the dust returns to the ground it came from and the spirit returns to God who gave it. and any response is not possible. So he says at the end of the book, now all has been heard, here is the conclusion of the matter. He says, fear God, keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man, for God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it is good or evil. The message of Ecclesiastes, very simple. It's a question. Where is God in my life? Have I taken a position? Maybe I haven't actively dismissed him from my life, but I've pushed him to the side. I'm going to do this life on my own. As you write the diary of your life, remember these things. A day is coming when we will give an account. And as I understand the Bible, there's no avoiding that. Number two, God has designed you to experience emptiness without him. So that in your emptiness, as in the writer of Ecclesiastes, I will turn to him. Number three, remember your Creator, who is Jesus Christ, who came for you, who died on the cross for you. He rose again, he ascended, he is at the Father's right hand for you. And number four, now is the time to pursue what is above the sun. A number of years ago, I was preparing and teaching a class for men. And I read a book in preparation for that by Patrick Morley. I couldn't articulate to you anything else he said in that book, except for this one statement. The turning point of our lives is when we stop seeking the God we want and start seeking the God who is. That's the start. Let me conclude with this story. You may have heard of a man by the name of Cecil Rhodes. He was instrumental in developing what we know of as the Rhodes Scholarship. And the old countries of North and South Rhodesia, based on his name, he gave to the British Empire. Well, anyways, as a young man, he left England for South Africa. And he founded a very prestigious mining company called De Beers. And he did that at age 27. In 8 years, he controlled the diamond mining industry. At age 36, he became Prime Minister of the Cape Colony of South Africa. At age 41, he owned all the diamond mining, one of the wealthiest men in the world, and at his death, as a legacy to the British Empire, gave North and South Rhodesia, which are not called by that name today. He once wrote, in his younger years, he wrote this: if there is a God and he cares for men, then the most important thing in the world is to find out what he wants and to do it. That was his own statement. Well, he lived out his life, accomplishing amazing things. And it happened that he was traveling by train, and he was in a compartment on that train with another man. And that was William Booth. He was a friend, William Booth, who founded the Salvation Army. And William Booth, as they're traveling and talking, William Booth looked over to Cecil Rhodes and he said, "Tell me, Rhodes, are you happy?" And Cecil Rhodes said, "Me happy? No way." Well, at the end of his life, he wrote this. When he was about to die, he cried out in remorse. "I've found much in Africa, diamonds, gold, and land, but now I must leave them all behind. Not a thing I've gained can I take with me. Eternal treasures that abide I have not sought, therefore at this moment I actually have nothing." It's almost like he could have written Ecclesiastes. But the fact is, if my life consists of that which is under the sun, only this world, it will lead to despair and a sense of meaninglessness. Where is God? And it starts with God's Son. Remember your Creator. May God use this disturbing book in our hearts to move us to Him. Let's pray. Father, so many years ago, you led this man to write this synopsis of his life. And it clearly points out the fact, without God in my life, there's no clear sense of purpose. And it comes by bowing the knee and acknowledging our Creator, Jesus Christ, that He came for us. He provided life. He provided meaning, life abundant. May we settle that with you today. Thank you for these words. In your name, amen.